of Meiglin. Arathel Arfenia, the White Lady of the Noldor, daughter of Fingolfin, dwelt in Nevrast with Torgon, her brother, and she went with him to the Hidden Kingdom. But she wearied of the guarded city of Gondolin, desiring ever the longer the more to ride again in the wide lands, and to walk in the forests, as had been her wont in Valinor. And when 200 years had passed since Gondolin was full wrought, she spoke to Torgon, and asked leave to depart. Torgon was loath to grant this, and long denied her. But at the last he yielded, saying, "Go then, if you will, though it is against my wisdom, and I forebode that ill will come of it, both to you and to me. But you shall go only to seek Fingon, our brother, and those that I send with you shall return hither to Gondolin as swiftly as they may." But Arathel said, "I am your sister, and not your servant, and beyond your bounds. I will go as seems good to me, and if you begrudge me an escort, then I will go alone." Then Torgon answered, "I grudge you nothing that I have. Yet I desire that none shall dwell beyond my walls who know the way hither, and if I trust you, my sister, others I trust less to keep guard on their tongues." And Torgon appointed 3 lords of his household to ride with Arathel, and he bid them lead her to Fingon in Hithlum, if they might prevail upon her. "And be wary," he said, "for though Morgoth be yet hemmed in the north, there are many perils in Middle-earth of which the lady knows nothing." Then Arathel departed from Gondolin, and Turgon's heart was heavy at her going. But when she came to the ford of Brithiach in the river Sirion, she said to her companions, "Turn now south and not north, for I will not ride to Hithlum. My heart desires rather to find the sons of Feanor, my friends of old." And since she could not be dissuaded, they turned south as she commanded, and sought admittance into Doriath. But the march wardens denied them, for Thingol would suffer none of the Noldor to pass the girdle, save his kinsfolk of the house of Finarfin, and least of all those that were friends of the sons of Feanor. Therefore the march wardens said to Arathel, "To the land of Celegorm for which you seek, lady, you may by no means pass through the realm of King Thingol. You must ride beyond the girdle of Melian to the south or to the north. The speediest way is by the paths that lead east from the Brithiach, through Dimbar, and along the north march of this kingdom, until you pass the bridge of Esgaldiwin, and the fords of Aros, and come to the lands that lie behind the hill of Himring. There dwell, as we believe, Celegorm and Curufin, and it may be that you will find them, but the road is perilous." Then Arathel turned back and sought the dangerous road between the haunted valleys of Ered Gorgoroth and the north fences of Doriath. And as they drew near to the evil region of Nan Dun Gortheb, the riders became enmeshed in shadows, and Arathel strayed from her companions and was lost. They sought long for her in vain, fearing that she had been ensnared or had drunk from the poisoned streams of that land. But the fell creatures of Ungoliant that dwelt in the ravines were aroused and pursued them, and they hardly escaped with their lives. When at last they returned and their tale was told, there was great sorrow in Gondolin, and Turgon sat long alone, enduring grief and anger in silence. But Arathel, having sought in vain for her companions, rode on, for she was fearless and hardy of heart, as were all the children of Finwë. And she held on her way, and crossing Esgaldiwin and Aros, came to the land of Himlad, between Aros and Kelon, where Celegorm and Curufin dwelt in those days, before the breaking of the siege of Angband. At that time they were from home, riding with Caranthia east in Thargelion. But the people of Celegorm welcomed her, and bade her stay among them with honour until their lord's return. There for a while she was content, and had great joy in wandering free in the woodlands. But as the year lengthened and Celegorm did not return, she became restless again, and took to riding alone ever further abroad, seeking for new paths and untrodden glades. Thus it chanced in the waning of the year that Arathel came to the south of Himlad, and passed over Kelon, and before she was aware, she was enmeshed in Nan. In that wood, in ages past, Melian walked in the twilight of Middle-earth, when the trees were young, and enchantment lay upon it still. But now the trees of Nan Elmoth were the tallest and darkest in all Beleriand, and there the sun never came. And there Eol dwelt, who was named the Dark Elf. Of old he was the kin of Thingol, but he was restless and ill at ease in Doriath, and when the girdle of Melian was set about the forest of Region, where he dwelt, he fled thence to Nan Elmoth. There he lived in deep shadow, loving the night and the twilight under the stars. He shunned the Noldor, holding them to blame for the return of Morgoth, to trouble the quiet of Beleriand. But for the dwarves, he had more liking than any other of the elven folk of old. From him, the dwarves learned much of what passed in the lands of the Eldar. Now the traffic of the dwarves down from the Blue Mountains followed two roads across East Beleriand, and the northern way, going towards the fords of Aros, passed nigh to Nan Elmoth. And there Eol would meet the Naugrim and hold converse with them. And as their friendship grew, he would at times go and dwell as guest in the deep mansions of Nogrod, or Belagost. There he learned much of metalwork, and came to great skill therein, and he devised a metal as hard as the steel of the dwarves, but so malleable that he could make it thin and supple, and yet it remained resistant to all blades and darts. He named it Galvorn, for it was black and shining like jet, and he was clad in it whenever he went abroad. But Eol, though stooped by his smithwork, was no dwarf, but a tall elf of a high kin of the Teleri, noble, though grim of face, and his eyes could see deep into shadows and dark places. And it came to pass that he saw Arathel Arfeniel, as she strayed among the tall trees near the borders of Nan Elmoth, a gleam of white in the dim land. Very fair she seemed to him, and he desired her. And he set his enchantments about her, so that she could not find the ways out, but drew ever nearer to his dwelling in the depths of the wood. There were his smithy, and his dim halls, and such servants as he had, silent and secret as their master. And when Arathel, weary with wandering, came at last to his doors, he revealed himself, and he welcomed her, and led her into his house. And there she remained. For Eol took her to wife, and it was long ere any of her kin heard of her again. It is not said that Arathel was wholly unwilling, nor that her life in Nan Elmoth was hateful to her for many years. For though at Eol's command she must shun the sunlight, they wandered far together under the stars, or by the light of the sickle moon. Or she might fare alone as she would, save that Eol forbade her to seek the sons of Feanor or any others of the Noldor. And Arathel bore to Eol a son in the shadows of Nan Elmoth, and in her heart she gave him a name in the forbidden tongue of the Noldor, Lomien, that signifies Child of the Twilight. But his father gave him no name until he was 12 years old. Then he called him Maeglin, which is Sharp Glance, for he perceived that the eyes of his son were more piercing than his own, and his thought could read the secrets of hearts beyond the mist of words. As Maeglin grew to full stature, he resembled in face and form rather his kindred of the Noldor, but in mood and mind he was the son of his father. His words were few, save in matters that touched him near, and then his voice had a power to move those that heard him, and to overthrow those that withstood him. He was tall and black-haired. His eyes were dark, yet bright and keen as the eyes of the Noldor, and his skin was white. Often he went with Eol to the cities of the dwarves in the east of Ered Lindon, and there he learned eagerly what they would teach, and above all, the craft of finding the ores of metals in the mountains. Yet it is said that Maeglin loved his mother better, and if Eol were abroad, He would sit long beside her and listen to all that she could tell him of her kin and their deeds in Eldamar, and of the might and valour of the princes of the house of Fingolfin. All these things he laid to heart, but most of all that which he heard of Turgon, and that he had no heir. For Elenwe, his wife, perished in the crossing of the Helcaraxa, and his daughter Idril Celebrindel was his own. In the telling of these tales there was awakened in Arathel a desire to see her own kin again, and she marvelled that she had grown weary of the light of Gondolin, and the fountains in the sun, and the green sward of Tumladen under the windy skies of spring. Moreover, she was often alone in the shadows when both her son and her husband were away. Of these tales also grew the first quarrels of Meiglin and Eol, for by no means would his mother reveal to Meiglin where Turgon dwelt, nor by what means one might come thither, and he bided his time, trusting yet to wheedle the secret from her, or perhaps to read her unguarded mind. But ere that could be done, he desired to look on the Noldor, and speak with the sons of Feanor, his kin, that dwelt not far away. But when he declared his purpose to Eol, his father was wrathful. "You are of the house of Eol, Meiglin, my son," he said, "and not of the Golothrim. All this land is the land of the Teleri, and I will not deal nor have my son deal with the slayers of our kin, the invaders and usurpers of our homes. In this you shall obey me, or I will set you in bonds." And Meiglin did not answer, but was cold and silent, and went abroad no more with Eol, and Eol mistrusted him. It came to pass that at the midsummer the dwarves, as was their custom, bade Eol to a feast in Nogrod, and he rode away. Now Meiglin and his mother were free for a while to go where they wished, and they rode often to the eaves of the wood, seeking the sunlight. And desire grew hot in Meiglin's heart to leave Nan Elmath for ever. Therefore he said to Arathel, "Lady, let us depart while there is time. What hope is there in this wood for you or for me? Here we are held in bondage, and no profit shall I find here. For I have learned all that my father has to teach, or that the Naugrim will reveal to me. Shall we not seek for Gondolin? You shall be my guide, and I will be your guard." Then Arathel was glad, and looked with pride upon her son, and telling the servants of Eol that they went to seek the sons of Feanor, they departed and rode away to the north eaves of Nan Elmoth. There they crossed the slender stream of Kelon into the land of Himlad, and rode on to the fords of Aros, and so westward along the fences of Doriath. Now Eol returned out of the east sooner than Meiglin had foreseen, and found his wife and his son but 2 days gone. And so great was his anger that he followed after them even by the light of day. As he entered the Himlad, he mastered his wrath and went warily, remembering his danger, for Celegorm and Curufin were mighty lords who loved Eol not at all. And Curufin, moreover, was of perilous mood. But the scouts of Aglon had marked the riding of Meiglin and Arathel to the fords of Aros, and Curufin, perceiving that strange deeds were afoot, came south from the pass and encamped near the fords. And before Eol had ridden far across the Himlad, he was waylaid by the riders of Curufin and taken to their lord. Then Curufin said to Eol, "What errand have you, dark elf, in my lands? An urgent matter, perhaps, that keeps one so sun-shy abroad by day." And Eol, knowing his peril, restrained the bitter words that arose in his mind. "I have learned, Lord Curufin," he said, "that my son and my wife, the White Lady of Gondolin, have ridden to visit you while I was from home, and it seemed to me fitting that I should join them on this errand." Then Curufin laughed at Eol, and he said, "They might have found their welcome here less warm than they had hoped had you accompanied them. But it is no matter, for that was not their errand. It is not 2 days since they passed over the Arosiach, and thence rode swiftly westward. It seems that you would deceive me, unless indeed you yourself have been deceived." And Eol answered, "Then, Lord, perhaps you will give me leave to go and discover the truth of this matter." "You have my leave, but not my love," said Curufin. "The sooner you depart from my land, the better will it please me." Then Eol mounted his horse, saying, "It is good, Lord Curufin, to find a kinsman thus kindly at need. I will remember it when I..." Then Curufin looked darkly upon Eol. "Do not flaunt the title of your wife before me," he said. "For those who steal the daughters of the Noldor, and wed them without gift or leave, do not gain kinship with their kin. I have given you leave to go, take it, and be gone. By the laws of the Eldar I may not slay you at this time, and this counsel I add. Return now to your dwelling in the darkness of Nan Elmoth, for my heart warns me that if you now pursue those who love you no more, never will you return thither." Then Eol rode off in haste, and he was filled with hatred of all the Noldor, for he perceived now that Maeglin and Arathel were fleeing to Gondolin. And driven by anger and the shame of his humiliation, he crossed the fords of Aros and rode hard upon the way that they had gone before. And though they knew not that he followed them, and he had the swiftest steed, he came never in sight of them until they reached the Brithiach and abandoned their horses. Then, by ill fate, they were betrayed, for the horses neighed loudly, and Eol's steed heard them, and sped towards them. And Eol saw from afar the white raiment of Arathel, and marked which way she went, seeking the secret path into the mountains. Now Arathel and Maeglin came to the outer gate of Gondolin, and the dark guard under the mountains. And there she was received with joy, and passing through the seven gates, she came with Maeglin to Turgon, upon Amon Gwareth. Then the king listened with wonder to all that Arathel had to tell, and he looked with liking upon Maeglin, his sister's son, seeing in him one worthy to be accounted among the princes of the Noldor. "I rejoice indeed that Arfeniel has returned to Gondolin," he said. "And now more fair again shall my city seem than in the days when I deemed her lost, and Maeglin shall have the highest honour in my realm." Then Maeglin bowed low, and took Turgon for lord and king to do all his will. But thereafter he stood silent and watchful, for the bliss and splendour of Gondolin surpassed all that he had imagined from the tales of his mother, and he was amazed by the strength of the city, and the hosts of its people, and the many things strange and beautiful that he beheld. Yet to none were his eyes more often drawn than to Idril, the king's daughter, who sat beside him. For she was golden as the Vanya, her mother's kindred, and she seemed to him as the sun from which all the king's hall drew its light. But Eol, following after Arathel, found the dry river and the secret path, and so creeping in by stealth, he came to the guard, and was taken and questioned. And when the guard heard that he claimed Arathel as wife, they were amazed, and sent a swift messenger to the city, and he came to the king's hall. "Lord," he cried, "the guard have taken captive one that came by stealth to the dark gate. Eol, he names himself, and he is a tall elf, dark and grim, of the kindred of the Sindar. Yet he claims the Lady Arathel as his wife, and demands to be brought before you. His wrath is great, and he is hard to restrain, but we have not slain him as your law commands." Then Arathel said, "Alas, Eol has followed us even as I feared, but with great stealth was it done, for we saw and heard no pursuit as we entered upon the hidden way." And then she said to the messenger, "He speaks but the truth. He is Eol, and I am his wife, and he is the father of my son. Slay him not, but lead him hither to the king's judgment, if the king so wills." And so it was done. And Eol was brought into Turgon's hall, and stood before his high seat, proud and sullen. Though he was amazed no less than his son at all that he saw, his heart was filled the more with anger and with hate of the Noldor. But Torgon treated him with honor, and rose up and would take his hands. And he said, "Welcome, kinsman, for so I hold you. Here you shall dwell at your pleasure, save only that you must here abide and depart not from my kingdom, for it is my law that none who finds the way hither shall depart." But Eol withdrew his hand. "I acknowledge not your law," he said. "No right have you or any of your kin in this land to seize realms or to set bounds either here or there. This is the land of the Teleri, to which you bring war and all unquiet, dealing ever proudly and unjustly. I care nothing for your secrets, and I came not to spy upon you, but to claim my own, my wife, and my son. Yet if in Arathel, your sister, you have some claim, then let her remain, let the bird go back to the cage, where soon she will sicken again as she sickened before. But not so Meiglin. My son you shall not withhold from me. Come, Meiglin, son of Eol. Your father commands you. Leave the house of his enemies and the slayers of his kin, or be accursed." But Meiglin answered nothing. Then Torgon sat in his high seat, holding his staff of doom, and in a stern voice spoke, "I will not debate with you, dark elf. By the swords of the Noldor alone are your sunless woods defended. Your freedom to wander there wild you owe to my kin. And but for them, long since, you would have labored in thraldom in the pits of Angband. And here I am king. And whether you will it or will it not, my doom is law. This choice only is given to you, to abide here or to die here. And so also for your son." Then Eol looked into the eyes of King Torgon, and he was not daunted, but stood long without word or movement, while a still silence fell upon the hall. And Arathel was afraid, knowing that he was perilous. Suddenly, swift as a serpent, he seized a javelin that he held beneath his cloak, and cast it at Meiglin, crying, "The second choice I take, and for my son also, you shall not hold what is mine." But Arathel sprang before the dart, and it smote her in the shoulder, and Eol was overborne by many, and set in bonds, and led away, while others tended Arathel. But Meiglin, looking upon his father, was silent. It was appointed that Eol should be brought on the next day to the king's judgment, and Arathel and Idril moved Turgon to mercy. But in the evening Arathel sickened, though the wound had seemed little, and she fell into the darkness, and in the night she died. For the point of the javelin was poisoned, though none knew it until too late. Therefore, when Eol was brought before Turgon, he found no mercy, and they led him forth to the Caragdur, a precipice of black rock upon the north side of the hill of Gondolin, there to cast him down from the sheer walls of the city. And Meiglin stood by and said nothing. But at the last Eol cried out, "So you forsake your father and his kin, ill-gotten son. Here shall you fail of all your hopes, and here may you yet die the same death as I." Then they cast Eol over the Caragdur, and so he ended, and to all in Gondolin it seemed just. But Idril was troubled, and from that day she mistrusted her kinsman. But Meiglin prospered and grew great among the Gondolindrim, praised by all and high in the favor of Turgon. For if he would learn eagerly and swiftly all that he might, he had much also to teach. And he gathered about him all such as had the most bent to smithcraft and mining. And he sought in the Echoriath, which are the encircling mountains, and found rich loads of ore of divers metals. Most he prized the hard iron of the mine of Anghabar in the north of the Echoriath. And thence he got a wealth of forged metal and steel, so that the arms of the Gondolindrim were made ever stronger and more keen. And that stood them in good stead in the days to come. Wise in counsel was Maeglin, and wary, and yet hardy and valiant at need. And that was seen in after days. For when, in the dread year of the Nirnaeth Arnoediad, Turgon opened his leaguer and marched forth to the help of Fingon in the north, Maeglin would not remain in Gondolin as regent of the king, but went to the war and fought beside Turgon, and proved fell and fearless in battle. Thus all seemed well with the fortunes of Maeglin, who had risen to be mighty among the princes of the Noldor, and greatest save one in the most renowned of their realms. Yet he did not reveal his heart. And though not all things went as he would, he endured it in silence, hiding his mind so that few could read it, unless it were Idril Celebrimbor. For from his first days in Gondolin he had borne a grief ever worsening that robbed him of all joy. He loved the beauty of Idril, and desired her without hope. The Eldar wedded not with kin so near, nor ever before had any desire to do so. And however that might be, Idril loved Maeglin not at all. And knowing his thought of her, she loved him the less, for it seemed to her a thing strange and crooked in him, as indeed the Eldar ever since have deemed it, an evil fruit of the kinslaying, whereby the shadow of the curse of Mandos fell upon the last hope of the Noldor. But as the years passed, still Maeglin watched Idril and waited, and his love turned to darkness in his heart. And he sought the more to have his will in other matters, shirking no toil or burden, if he might thereby have power. Thus it was in Gondolin, and amid all the bliss of that realm, while its glory lasted, a dark seed of evil was sown.